Why shall we still eat the same authentic old recipes and not follow evolution?
I just don't like it. It's a matter of taste at the end of the day.
Beyond you can imagine, a 24 course meal.
Chinese, authentic, by a Lebanese guy.
8 billion eat differently.
They have now one of the biggest, most important restaurant group in the world.
Welcome to a new episode of Food Unscripted. And today it's gonna be straightforward. Fusion or authentic?
Fusion or authentic. It's the big, this versus that. Look, for me, there are purists and there are people who like to try new things, let's say. And I mean, usually I'm a purist. I like authentic things. I do not like fusion things. Having said that, there are a few examples of fusion that I like.
I'm going to be the devil's advocate.
Okay.
So in a world where everything has evolved,
yeah.
2024, iPhone, Samsung, AI, intelligence, and lots of things evolved. Why shall we still eat the same authentic old recipes and not follow evolution?
You know, sometimes it's just not good. You know what I'm saying? I don't want potato chips on my sushi. When I have sushi, I want traditional Japanese sushi. Look, some people may like sushi with mayonnaise on top and potato chips, which is, you know, they have that here in Dubai. I just don't like it. It's a matter of taste at the end of the day.
It's a thin line between what are we teaching our kids. It's a very thin line between, is evolution good or bad?
Yes.
Is it? It's a thin line between, did the world invent everything? Did the world discover everything? And is hummus still as good as it is and nothing needs to be added to it?
Yeah.
Or is a manoushi a good manoushi? Or za'atar is made to be eaten alone or not? Is sushi simply about raw fish and the quality of fish and doesn't have to have mayonnaise or whatever with it?
Yeah.
So that evolution of things has taken us to places where, do we want to really go there? Or not, it's a thin line. I'm not saying I'm not against, I'm against fusion or not. Taking a step back and understanding what is food, and food is part, connects human to culture. Does food do men or men do food?
Yes, you said it there, how it connects to culture. I love to take the example of sushi as an example. You know, sushi is passed down through generations, sometimes the father to the son. It's an art in Japan. It's not just rice and raw fish. There's a lot that goes into it. And it's something that I've come to respect. It's a traditional thing. It's a very Japanese thing. I often think about, what is the sushi master in Tokyo who spent 20 years perfecting his art? Think of, you know, somebody coming and putting mayonnaise and potato chips and all these weird things on it and calling it sushi. It's kind of not fair. An easy way for us, you and me, to relate to that is when we see our beloved hummus being played with. I went the other day in a food market in Los Angeles, and I found chocolate hummus. I think to myself, I'm like, you know, please, it's not right. It's a similar feeling you get. So.
Exactly, like the comparison is very straightforward. Real sushi, which I would say 90% of the world doesn't understand what
does
it is.
Does not understand.
And lots of people around us just eat sushi thinking this is it.
Yeah.
And what sushi is, or Japanese cuisine is, in the country where there are the highest level of 3-star Michelin, and some of them are street food, is only about the quality of rice, the temperature of rice, the amount of wasabi, the perfection and quality of fish.
How you slice it.
And no soy sauce needed, no salt needed, and all of this.
Yes.
And then fast forward, it evolved to what Californian sushi is, and it's dramatic. Cucumber and carrots and mayonnaise and fried the tempura and stuff.
Yeah.
And oh my goodness, where the rice has become sweet, when stickiness is unbearable.
Yes.
So sushi is not what the fast food sushi you're delivering home is, and definitely sushi is not something that can be delivered anyway, because it can kill you and it lowers the temperature along the way.
Yeah.
So back to what sushi is one piece with two fingers, no chopsticks needed.
You eat it with your hands.
Exactly.
There's even a right way of eating sushi. This is another episode.
Yes.
Right.
So back then, fast forward to what we understand and our culture. When I first traveled to the States and saw what happened to our culture, I would say the food culture, I was so shocked, so depressed, so sad. And I started saying, please stop playing with my culture. Please stop playing with my culture. Please stop informing Canadians and Americans and showing the world that this is how we eat. We do not eat this way.
We do not.
We do not eat a shawarma.
We don't have a falafel sandwich this big.
We do not have a falafel this way. We do not have a shawarma put on the grill and blackened.
Yeah.
We don't have a gyro that is fat and only fat that looks like plastic on a shelf. Guys, what the hell did you do to my culture? All the onions are this size. Parsley are American parsley, not the Italian ones. They feel like kale, and they scratch your throat. They're putting sriracha sauce everywhere. They're mixing tahini and sriracha and hummus and everything in between.
Yeah.
And I believe, I always said, allow me to give it as is, Chipotle has changed the way people eat around the world. Taking Mexican, which is a purist cuisine that really looks like a Levantine cuisine, and I believe we're cousins, so we'll talk about that in a minute, Chipotle has put everything in a wrap.
Yeah.
Mixed rice and beans together. Choose the sauce you want. Any vegetables in it for you to fill up your stomach.
You get that wrap, and now they'll allow you to put it in a bowl. And you go down the line. You got your tray. You go, I want this, I want this, I want this. And you mix it all together. Throw on the sauce. Roll it up and eat it. This is not Mexican food.
Hell?
This is not Mexican
food. What the
food.
Hell?
Okay, maybe it's good. But it's not Mexican food.
Is it good? Is it truly good?
Some people love it.
Hey, mixing.
It just opened in Dubai. People were waiting in line.
For what? For a mix of flavors when every single thing needs to be enjoyed specifically. When a sambusik is enjoyed with hummus, one. When a kibbeh is enjoyed with hummus.
Yeah.
When bread is enjoyed with labneh and olive oil. When that mix and match reaches a certain limit where your body understands it and your mouth understands it.
Yes.
And then carbs, rice, and beans, and all together, and the mix and match of a million things. Why? How?
Part of authenticity for me is reducing the ingredients. You know what? You don't need a million things on there. You talked about the labneh sandwich. Labneh, olive oil, a piece of mint, maybe a cucumber. That's it. It doesn't need 1,000 different things on top. And you see that happening with Japanese food, with everything. But Mexican, you just gave the ultimate example of Chipotle.
So authentic versus fusion, yes, authentic, but yes, fusion. And when we say fusion, is keeping things right.
Yes.
So you can take a hummus and probably mix it with a little bit of avocado, which works. Mix it with basil, which works.
Yeah.
Decorated.
Chili works.
It works. But taking a hummus and putting chocolate with it, or taking a hummus and mixing it with whatever.
You know, some hummus that's being sold now in the United States and in other parts of the world doesn't have chickpea in it. But they call it hummus. It's the word hummus has now become dip, to mean dip. But it's not. It has to have chickpea in it.
So tabbouleh has evolved. Pomegranate was never part of tabbouleh, but yes, it works. Pomegranate molasses were never part of fattoush, but yes, it works. So the evolution of cuisine does work.
Yes.
Fusion in some of the Michelin stars around the world and the molecular cuisine, etc., have evolved food, yes, but without touching the basis. In Arabic, we'd say balaman misbil asis.
Yes.
So without touching the origin authenticity. So keep our culture alive and clean. Let people understand that food is clean. Food is cultural. Food is passion. Food is flavors. Food needs to take your body to the next level of umami, where you feel like, I felt something. It's not just food. Even eating a burger
is
an experience.
It is.
And when you take that burger and put anything in it and everything in it. And
you see these burgers that are this big, you know? Why? And
cheddar cream, cheddar sauce, the American cheddar juice. What the hell?
Yeah. Let's give some examples of fusion that works. I like always to give the example of how a dish or a food traveled and fused with another culture. One of the ultimate examples of that is the open-faced Mexican taco, which was brought by Lebanese immigrants to Mexico. And it's based on the Sikh shawarma. And in Mexico, it's mostly pork. And you can see them cutting it like that with the pineapple. And this was brought by Lebanese immigrants. It's now considered traditional Mexican food, the taco.
And it's called al pastor.
Taco al pastor or a la tromba, they call it.
So let's talk about food that travels.
Yes.
So evolution of food is, for me, is a yes. Since we have evolved in every kind of way possible. Humankind has evolved. Food has evolved.
Yes.
I have eaten a pizza at a restaurant with zero waiters and zero chefs. It's only machines doing a pizza. And that pizza was good.
Oh, wow.
That pizza was very, very, very good. And there's the machine that does it all for you. It's in Paris. Yes, evolution is fine. Evolution for people to go faster in this world is fine. 50 years back or 60 years back or 70 years back, I always give this example. Grandma and grandpa were living alone in the village, eating garlic and onions 24/7 because they didn't go to work, because they didn't go to have a business meeting in Beirut, mm-hmm. in the capital, because they didn't have to meet with anyone. So garlic and onions was part of the culture, were part of the culture, yes. But with the evolution, and as a small example, but with the evolution of the world 70 years later, you cannot have a tomb sandwich and go back to work.
Yep.
You cannot eat an onion in the morning and go meet your friends at work. You cannot eat garlic and go share a cab with someone else. So you need to understand that world has evolved.
Yep.
So our food habits have evolved.
Yes.
So those two ingredients, as an example, again, despite me being no garlic or onions, cannot be part of our food culture the same way they were when grandma used to say, yeah, mama, more garlic and more onions, or this is how I do it. So the evolution is important. Evolution has imposed a better street food, a faster street food, smaller sandwiches, things you can eat on the go, the carton box, the paper bag, and lots of things. And definitely Instagram played a big role, and COVID played a big role. Before COVID, we used to say, this is good or bad. After COVID, you would say, this is good or bad after 30 minutes, because there is a 30-minute delivery when probably 80-90% of people across the globe in business areas would have their food for lunch delivered. And this is the trend. So that evolution of food, how did food travel? So Levantine food, which we all know, 200 plates of meza, in a generous country, in a generous region, where on the same table you would see probably 20 to 30 plates, where we all eat from the same plates, where food is sharing. How did it travel to reach Europe or the America?
Yeah, it's basically through immigrants. Before that, it was through the spice route, through the silk route. And in the case of the Muslim world, it's the pilgrims that traveled for the last 1,500 years from all parts of the Muslim world to Mecca. And along the way, they brought their foods. Examples, the dumpling that became manti, manto. Now we have it in Saudi cuisine. Sambusik. There's a lot of examples like that of how food travels. There's a really good example of fusion of how food travels is. Immigrants went from Japan and China to Peru. In Peruvian cuisine now, you have Nikkei. Nikkei is Japanese Peruvian mixed together. It works beautifully.
Amazing.
The most famous one is Nobu Matsuhisa. He's the one. That's what you're eating at Nobu, people who don't realize that. These flavors, these are Peruvian flavors done into Japanese food. Yesterday, I posted a photo of a dish that is also Peruvian, but it's Chinese. It's a stir fry. It's called lomo saltado. Meat, potato, rice, gravy, onion, mix it together. You can remove the onion. So there are examples of fusion that work.
So food has traveled, as you said, for thousands of years.
Thousands of years.
And we accepted it. And back then, whoever invented sambusik copied it from someone. Mm-hmm. Whoever invented kibbe probably copied it from someone. And that Japanese cuisine that has traveled and went out of Japan, the island, all across, worked well back then. And then after Instagram, it became trendy.
Yes.
So it's not about how good you can eat, but it reached a point where it's how trendy it is. And we started inventing things. So re-understanding that food has traveled, that food has evolved, that food has taken it places, that cultures have connected. But back then there was no internet, no DHL, no FedEx, no planes to connect us.
No Instagram.
No Instagram mainly. Today, our evolution is different. And that, what is the line of, wait, we need to stop? And that's the question.
That is the question, absolutely. Let me give you another example of something that's happening right now as we speak. There is a lady here who came up with a chocolate bar, right? It's called Fix. I think she was either pregnant or she needed a fix of something. That's why she came over that. And she created this chocolate bar. You know what? There are many others doing the same chocolate bar, but now it's being made in New York. People are ordering it by FedEx. So food can travel. There are good examples of that, you know? Like I was telling you earlier about the example now, if you live in the States and you wanna have stone crabs from Joe's, you can order them online and they'll do overnight FedEx delivery.
Yeah, indeed. So talking about the evolution of food travels and how evolution is still ongoing, Lebanese and Levantine people had to adapt to American culture. So I call the Americans the bowl society. Everything is enjoyed in a bowl. All lunch are made in a bowl. And happily, it didn't reach much in this part of the world. Chipotle is introducing it now as we speak. Everything is in a bowl. Protein, they call them. Carbs and salads with the sauce on top. So the Lebanese cuisine or the Levantine cuisine had to evolve along the way and adapt to American culture because this is how Americans do. And some very successful people have done it while keeping the standard of how do we eat back home. So the quantities have changed, the ingredients have evolved, rice has been added even though it's not part of our culture much, and we do not eat rice for lunch every single day, or put it in a sandwich. Frike sometimes, burgol sometimes, beans sometimes, creating that Levantine Chipotle model while not touching the bases, while not doing anything anywhere.
Yeah.
I've been to an experience I would never forget in Canada when a Lebanese guy was doing a shawarma sandwich for $10, this big, and inside you would have fries, sriracha, hummus, batinjan, salad, tabbouleh, three bowls of falafel, shawarma lahmi,
all mixed together.
All together for only $10. And that American person went in, bought one, felt. And so I looked at the guy and said, what? Wait, whoa. This is how they eat? And I need to do my money.
Yeah.
So the evolution of businessmen from the East.
You adapt your product to local taste. And then it becomes a financial decision.
Without messing with the culture. So this guy was definitely touching the culture. This guy is teaching the Americans to eat something we do not eat back home. So let's start by what it is and then elevate it a little bit. Mm. Probably if the Americans like kale, add kale, but no spicy sauce of the Indians or whatever. So this is very important as a benchmark.
Yeah. Let me give you another example of fusion that I love. It's more of an evolution than a fusion. There are some chefs, young chefs, some incredible Levantine chefs that are modernizing our food, creating new dishes. The most famous one now is Chef Orfali doing his Aleppo-inspired dishes, but there are others. I was recently in Jordan. I went to two restaurants. They're modernizing the kebaniyya. They're modernizing the salads. How do you feel about that?
It's very important, very intelligent. I'm not sure if we need to call it fusion or modern. I love
evolution, modernization.
I like the modern word. So the modernization of food. I'll give you another example, and we'll merge our both examples. 10 years back, probably less, Middle Eastern or Levantine cuisine was never on the international scene of food because it's not one plate. It's not a classy like French plate. I'm not sure how can you do a Lebanese mesa table and put it on the international map of Michelin-starred restaurants. And back then, none, zero Arabic or Middle Eastern or Levantine restaurant had a Michelin star.
Yeah.
Until M. Sharif came in. And M. Sharif came in, changed the plate, minimized them, worked very, very hard on a great flavor, maximized to the maximum of umami, copied the recipes, created a system, and then worked so hard on decorating the plates, where every single plate and every single M. Sharif all across the globe has the same amount of ingredients. So 24 pieces of pomegranate, not 23, not a handful, counting them. Mint need to be a centimeter and a half, and not four, and not five, and not the big size. And I can go on and on and on.
You have to be like that if you want to expand and open multiple outlets.
So M. Sharif,
you have to have a system.
Yes, so M. Sharif introduced and put Middle Eastern, Levantine cuisine, Lebanese cuisine on the international map, and now she is in Harrods, and now she is in Hotel Paris in Monaco, and others, where we never imagined, because Middle Eastern food or Lebanese food was the food of bulky sharing the way it is. Without forgetting what Babel is doing in Dubai Mall, caviar with hummus and hummus with asmali and lots of amazing, amazing things, outstanding things. Yeah. And probably one day we're going to taste them together. You would say, okay, this is what modernization need to be.
Yeah.
This is how you can introduce European flavors or upscale or expensive flavors of the West to the East into creating something that will speak the language of all the 200 nationalities in Dubai without catering only to Lebanese who would come for hummus and the plate of Lebanon. So yes, modernization is very important, studied scientifically to create something that the body would appreciate and understand, that will take you to the next level of flavors, that you as someone who knows the cuisine will connect to without feeling, okay, wait, what the hell did you do to it? But elevate your flavor to the next level and let you feel that hummus in the umami of hummus or the extravaganza of hummus or the ecstasy of hummus. So yes, I am for modern thing, and I believe Urfari is doing a great job. Msharif is doing a great job. Babel is doing a great job. Yeah. To name a few, and we definitely forgot many.
And more recently, Beit Maryam, Chef Salam, has opened a new restaurant, Sofrat Maryam. Again, she's modernizing, changing. There are dishes that I've never seen before. You know what? I'm like, well, you know, why not? Let's go back to Msharif. I'm a huge fan of Msharif. In Monte Carlo, she has introduced a hummus bil lahme. But her hummus bil lahme is with Wagyu. And it's being sold at 90 euros. But you know what? It goes back to what you were saying in a previous episode. Know your customer. The people who live in Monaco are ultra high net worth individuals. For them, this is a normal evolution of a hummus. They're not going to think twice about it. And you know what? She's selling a lot of it.
Yeah.
She's selling a lot of it.
So the hummus...
And I heard it's really good. I haven't been yet.
So the average, the normal hummus plate is for 24 or 25 euros. What are the expectations? She does have one of the best hummus in the world.
Yes.
And she does take care of the presentation where the hummus chickpeas are beautifully designed.
Yes.
And that hummus plate is so eye candy and Instagrammable.
And it goes this way, not that way. So it feels like there's more.
Yes.
Maybe it is bigger than a normal hummus plate. I don't know.
Maybe. But when you eat that hummus, when you are in France or in Monaco, after a long day at the beach, surrounded by friends that are not Middle Eastern, and the whole setup that happens with it, you would expect so much from that plate of hummus, and for 24, you would have it.
Yeah.
On another hand, sometimes you go to a restaurant, and we discussed it in previous episodes, and you pay 110 for a pizza, and it's not worth to pay 110.
No.
Not the service, and not the pizza, and not the sauce, and not anything.
Yeah.
So that amount, and as you said, the $90 of a Wagyu, which someone would pay for a piece of steak with 80 grams of meat, or someone would pay it for something else with one bite of caviar.
Yeah.
So they've focused a lot on, one, the plate, two, something customers would never think of or talk about, think of the rent. You are paying the rent. You are helping
Monaco
with the rent.
Monaco is maybe the most expensive place in the world for rent per square meter. But again, it goes back. I know three people who have had that hummus with the Wagyu, and all three of them said it was really good, and they would order it again. It goes back to, don't go to an expensive restaurant or order an expensive dish and then complain about the price.
Hmm.
If you're willing to pay for it and enjoy it, all the credit to you.
Man, in Dubai, I would love to talk about Dubai for a minute, where 200 nationalities live all together, where the 200 nationalities brought in their culture in one city, in one small city, I would say, you have all the restaurants of the world in one place. Back then, 10 years back, 20 years back, the Middle East would travel to Europe to discover food. The Middle East would travel to America to discover food. Where we craved an American burger or New York pizza or Nashville chicken or whatever. Now, today, 2024, 5 years ago and ongoing, everything you crave around the world is available.
We have it all.
All in.
Yes.
Great flavors.
Yes.
Great inventions and innovations, of which probably Dubai chocolate and others. So instead of getting trends from around the world, Dubai is exporting trends.
Yes, it is. And another thing that's happening now in Dubai is collaborations. I get invited all the time to these collaboration dinners. I've been to one where they combined Iranian with Indian. Two chefs, they're friends. They say, okay, let's do it. They'll do a dinner, they'll invite some people, and you try different dishes. It's experimentation. Some work, some don't work. One of the dishes I loved, one of the dishes I said, it doesn't work for me. So you're getting a lot of these collaborations in the dinners. We have some very talented chefs, like you said, multiple nationalities. So they're creating things together.
Za'atar or pizza? I know za'atar or pizza came before. Which one is first?
Which one came first? I would have to say the Levantine one. Nice. But we're talking about food that travels.
Yeah.
So where did pasta come from? So pasta is closely associated with Italy, of course. But historians will tell you that it's a Chinese invention, and Marco Polo brought it with him to Italy from China, from the Far East. But you, when you think about it, the noodles, the noodle concepts of the Far East, and it makes sense that it's from China. Some of the best noodles come from China, noodle dishes and everything. I want to take you to a restaurant in Dubai that does incredible noodles and dumplings, Chinese, authentic, by a Lebanese guy who lived in China for many years, learned it, and came here and opened. It's called San Juan noodles.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
What is the most beautiful or memorable fusion, new, modern experience you've ever had in your life?
I have to say, it's the first time I ever had Noble. I'll never forget having the jalapeno, yellowtail with jalapeno, the tiradito, the sour, the miso codfish. For me, that's that. More recently, discovering Orfali's dishes, because it for me, it hit close to home, because you know I'm part Syrian. And I had, like, seeing him fuse together Japanese gyoza with a shishbarak, and even putting some Armenian sausage oil on top. I mean, it brought such comfort to me, and I loved it. I loved it. I have to get my fix of it.
Nice.
So I would say more recently it would be seeing what Orfali is doing. And of all time, definitely the first time I ever had Nobu, and every subsequent time I go to have it. How about you? Do you have a fusion that you love?
I would talk about two countries that I believe are cousins in their cuisines. You might expect me to say Lebanese and Italian, and yes, I agree, but more of Lebanese and the Mexican. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the Lebanese way of doing food and the Mexican way of doing food and the influence that has happened altogether, and being both countries on the same line of the earth, so they do guacamole. We didn't discover avocado until lately, and we have the same quality of avocados, but we don't have it in our culture. So they have guacamole, we have hummus. They do beans, we do beans. We have sauce bread or flat bread. They have
tortillas.
Yeah. They do corn, we do wheat. They have tomatoes, we have tomatoes. They do onions, we have onions. Their cuisine is based around dips and creaminess of things, and us as well. We have the shawarma, they have the shawarma. They have meat and pork, we have meat and pork, and so on and so forth. So that fusion of both cuisines, or that resemblance of both cuisines, and I love, I'm big fan of Mexican cuisine, especially the ones I've had in San Diego, which is the second Mexico, very close to Mexico. And then one day I went to Brooklyn for a restaurant that is Lebanese Mexican. So the chef is Lebanese, the chef feminine is Mexican. So two chefs together, been working together for the last 15 years. And the Mexican chef has been a Lebanese restaurant in New York mm-hmm. for 10 years. So she left the restaurant, came in partnership with the Lebanese one who had restaurants in Beirut, joined forces in Brooklyn and created Taco El Cidro, whatever, I forgot
the name.
Must
be phenomenal,
exactly.
Sounds great.
Oh my goodness. You can't imagine. And you would enjoy a taco with Lebanese spices. You would enjoy mlouchiyya the Mexican way. You would enjoy the avocado with a little bit of hummus. Hummus guacamole, and how he mixed both things, where you feel the avocado or the guacamole with a little bit of hummus on the side. So that mix and match of both cultures, I believe, is
yeah, I never thought of that, but it sounds like it would be great.
One of the most memorable restaurants I've ever been to, and it's not modern, but modern. It's not fusion, but fusion. It's different on all fronts. Is a trip I did to Copenhagen, definitely. And the restaurant is beyond you can imagine. A 24-course meal. So Noma is outstanding.
Yes.
Noma is a 24.
Noma is an institution. It's a university.
I've had the chance to come earlier. I had the chance to meet one of the chefs, and I had the chance to ask any question I want. So if you take a step back on Noma, even though it was a very, very expensive dinner. I would pay again and again and again and again. 40 chefs are cooking for you for a restaurant that only can take around probably 24 or 30 people. Let's say 40, if I'm not mistaken. It's a 3,300 square meter restaurant where half of it is all about expertise and discoveries. And they even have an ant farm.
They have an ant farm, they have a fermentation, they have a laboratory.
And all of this during a 24-course meal. First restaurant ever I've been to, Michelin, two-star back then, where you don't have a fork and a knife, it's all with your hands. It was, I discovered what food is.
I'll tell you, I've had the pleasure and the fortune of eating there twice. And on my second time there, they told me, I got to know Chef René. And he said, you know, there's a Arab, we have an Arabic chef here, Lebanese chef. I said, no way. He introduced me to him. He came out. His name is Tariq. And he's part of the team. They have a family feel to it. There's a camaraderie there. Mm-hmm. They're all together. And on one of the menus, they had a shawarma dish, which was made out of vegetarian.
Unique in all fronts.
And this is the genius of Chef René Redzepi. He's able to take all these different nationalities, and he allows everybody to express themselves and to come up with ideas, and that's why he is who he is.
So back to Italian, which I love. We're not talking much about Lebanese, but let's talk about the international cuisine. When you go to Italy, you eat something that's phenomenal. The simplest food ever, ever.
Yes.
Three ingredients in every plate, but yet it takes you places. It takes you places. And I believe lots of people around the world do not understand what Italian food is. And Italian food has evolved or changed by the Italians of New York and the Italians that have landed in America. And many of them never returned back home. They're less attached to their culture the way we are. They do speak Italian. You see photos all across the place or the restaurant about Italy, but their pasta has evolved differently.
Yes.
So pastas of America.
American Italian cuisine.
Big, creamy. Carbonara with cream, overcooked, tagliatelle Alfredo, which was American creation, and so on and so forth. And that pizza has become bigger, thicker. They added garlic to the sauce of pizza, which is a big no. Italian would tell you, no, never, ever. So in America, it has onions, it's a cooked sauce, even though it was never cooked, and the Italian do not cook it. So that evolution of what Italian cuisine has become and how Italian cuisine has been introduced to the world is a modernization of the cuisine, even though, as we said before, it's touching the culture. So the world today, unfortunately, thinks that a pizza needs to have garlic in it, thinks that a pizza needs to be reheated, thinks that pasta needs to be overcooked, thinks that a carbonara needs to have white cream, thinks that pasta is enjoyed with chicken, and so on and so forth. So this is the red line. This is the, unanswered question. Should we evolve the cuisine and just look what happened to Italians? Or should we keep it traditional and eat it in fine dining restaurants?
Yes.
So when you say, I'm having Italian today, which one? Fine dining Italian or Americanized Italian?
American Italian. And in the case of American Italian, you can't not mention there's the one dish that created an empire. And that's the spicy vodka rigatoni of Carbone by Mario Carbone. On the back of this one dish, they have now one of the biggest, most important restaurant groups in the world. So it works.
And there are people there's a trend in the States. There are people that are traveling all around the States to visit every single Carbone available.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's now Carbone Beach coming. Mm-hmm. And they do a Carbone pop-up during Formula One. There's a Carbone in Riyadh. There's a Carbone coming to Atlantis in Dubai. Everybody's anticipating it. Everybody wants to have that spicy rigatoni. It's phenomenal. I went in Hong Kong to have it. You know, normally I would have only Chinese food, but I went and I had.
So back
so if to, it works, it works, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
So back to sushi. Americans have changed it. California has changed
California roll.
What a change.
I was in Paris once at a restaurant, Kinugawa, and somebody ordered salmon sushi and California roll, and the chef, I was there, I heard it with my own, he's like, we do not have American sushi here. You know, salmon is a new thing into Japan. It wasn't always there. So it's not common to have salmon sushi. Where now, when you think sushi, it's tuna and salmon.
Yeah.
So whereas in Japan, it's about a lot of everything else.
So imagine that Americans have used the word Japan all across the globe. Sushi has reached all across the globe, and Japan doesn't take anything out of it. Mm. Because even though they do not sell the ingredients to anything, any of the items. And take the same for Lebanese. So the Lebanese cedar is everywhere. Lebanese flag is everywhere. Lebanese cuisine or Lebanese food is everywhere. But are all the owners Lebanese? No.
Example of that is Sabra hummus.
Yeah.
It's in every single supermarket, gas station, mm-hmm. everywhere. And it's not Lebanese. But if you don't know, you think it's Lebanese.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And the Italians have the same. So pizza is everywhere.
The Olive Garden. The Italian chain. It's nothing to do with Italian.
Nothing with Italian.
It's not even real Italian food.
So food has food of the world has changed. Food of the world has evolved. Yes, we are 8 billion. 8 billion eat differently. Some have more developed palates. Some just eat to live. Some would eat anything just because it's time for eating.
Yes.
And others will take time to enjoy the real thing and understand the real thing. There's a debate ongoing. I will go back to the simplest of things. Five Guys versus In-N-Out versus McDonald's versus gourmet burger and pay 10 times the price. And which burger would you choose? It's a personal preference, definitely.
Yes.
And people would eat anything anywhere. And then a connoisseur would tell you, I will have value for money, lets you feel good. I had a burger before we started.
Would you say good, authentic also? Because Five Guys is a good, authentic American burger.
With no complication, no butter added, no brioche and stuff, and extravaganza bread that would cost 10 times more.
No foie gras in there.
No foie gras in there.
But don't get me wrong, the DB burger by Daniel Boulud is very good.
Back to the restaurant episode where we said, what do you want to create? Something people would eat every day or something people would eat every week? Yeah. Burger is once a month burger?
Max, because it's rich, it's heavy. Plus, you can't find it everywhere.
But you'll eat a fast food burger twice a week.
What can you easily eat?
For I have one every day.
I just caught you eating a burger before we eat.
Yes, and I felt great. I'll tell you which burger it is. In the comments, ask me all the questions. I had a double cheeseburger, fries, Coke, and I feel two episodes filmed. This was an amazing, memorable, long and short and quick episode about how food travels. Food travels good, food travels bad, food evolves, food has gone from authenticity all the way up to being super complicated. It's a personal opinion. Are you okay or not? Please leave your comments and tell us what do you think. Do you think we need to create something that is more modern? Do you think we need to create something that is traditional and just enjoy the traditional things? I personally would have a hummus, a labneh, and something authentic, traditional Lebanese every single day of my life, three times a day. And less of the complicated new adaptations. But I'm okay with adaptations.
I'm team authentic. I love authentic. But I gave a few examples of some fusion that I like. I have a lot of respect for chefs that are modernizing things. I'm willing to experiment. But it has to, at the base of it, I want the authentic flavor. I want the authentic ingredients.
Coming your way with lots of positivity, happiness, knowledge, enjoyment, and it is unscripted. Nothing has been prepared, nothing has been talked about before. It's a 38 minutes discussion about anything you want to know about and any question you might have an unanswered answer to. Anyway, Bedouin Foodie, no garlic, no onions, on Instagram.